Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. So the conference tournaments have wound down. That means the NCAA tournament is heating up, and if you're like me, you are not just filling out one bracket. You're filling out a lot of brackets, and you're making a lot of bets on college basketball at this time of year. And DraftKings Sportsbook is the place to go to make those bets. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code MANIX. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code MANIX. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And we are back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. I want to welcome in everyone that's listening on the podcast feed. If you are not a subscriber, get over to the Boxing with Chris Mannix feed. Hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get this pod in your feed every single week. It is the second episode that we've got this week. If you missed the first show, which came out on Monday night, go back and take a listen. Lou DiBella, longtime boxing promoter, he was in for his annual State of Boxing Conversation. Lou always has some strong opinions on the state of the sport. And Devin Haney made his first public comments about everything that has been going on with Ryan Garcia over the last few weeks. Some really interesting thoughts from Devin Haney in that podcast. So make sure you go back and give that a listen. This week, for the second episode, got another good one. Keith Idek, friend of the podcast, longtime boxing writer. He joins me to talk about all the news that we've had over the last couple of days. We begin with a big fight in the heavyweight division. ESPN.com reporting that Deontay Wilder and Zhele Zhang are going to get in the ring on June 1st in Saudi Arabia. This is a crossroads heavyweight fight, and it's a fight that I can't see going to the judges. You got two guys that can crack in the heavyweight division, both with a lot on the line. Good fight. We talk about that. We get into the news that Sebastian Fundora is going to replace Keith Thurman at the top of the March 30th pay-per-view. That's right. Tim Tszyu, the 154-pound champion, will now face Sebastian Fundora. Two belts will be on the line in that fight. Keith and I discussed that. Plus, Canelo Alvarez made his first public comments after choosing to fight Jaime Munguia on May 4th. A lot of people asked Canelo about the David Benavidez fight. We unpack some of Canelo's responses here on the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. So when we come back, my conversation with Keith Idek. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Keith Idek is here, longtime boxing writer, friend of the podcast. Good to have you back, Keith. And a few topics I want to get into on this show, but I guess we should start with the breaking news that we learned just a few minutes ago, a Saudi Arabian card coming together on June 1st. And one of the fights on that card is going to be a matchup between Deontay Wilder and Zhe Li Zhang, a heavyweight matchup between two guys, both coming off losses to Joseph Parker. And Keith, this was a fight that I know the Saudis wanted to make back in March. You know, Zhang, his team was on board for it. My understanding was the Wilder price was too high, even for the Saudis to want to swallow. And there really wasn't a lot of momentum for Wilder coming off that disappointing loss to Parker. Well, now the money, they can make it work. Zhang coming off the loss. Really a crossroads fight, I think, between two guys that you can certainly make the case that, you know, winner moves on to something big. Loser goes home? Like, is this almost a loser kind of go-home fight? Deontay's in his late 30s. Zhe Li Zhang's in his early 40s. You know, a loss would mean two in a row for both. I look at this fight as being both potentially good, because I think both these guys are big punchers, but it's also a win or go home type of matchup. How do you see it?
Well, I think it'll be more interesting than Jilei Zhang against Joseph Parker or Joseph Parker against Deontay Wilder. So you could look at it that way from a positive standpoint. I think there'll be more action in the fight. And I think Wilder will come to fight more than he did against Joseph Parker. It's kind of crazy, Chris, that the landscape has changed in a way where we're now talking about two guys who lost to Joseph Parker in back-to-back fights now at a crossroads in their career when Wilder was a long-reigning WBC champion. Of course, Jilei Zhang is coming off a great year in which he knocked out Joe Joyce twice. And now they're two guys who have been beaten by Joseph Parker, who's rejuvenated his career and is in a great position.
Incredible.
And I didn't see this coming because Jilei Zhang did have the rematch clause with Joseph Parker, an immediate rematch clause in his contract before that fight. So I think it's a pleasant surprise for boxing fans because I don't think, based on the way that the Zhang-Parker fight went, that there was much of a public appetite for them to fight again. I don't think people would have wanted to sit through that again, although Zhang knocked him down twice and looked like at one point he might get him out of there early in the fight. It was a relatively dull fight, except for those two instances when he knocked Joseph Parker down. He did stun him a couple of other times. He just didn't let his hands go enough, and I thought that he lost the fight, as most people did. So I think here it's a little more intriguing than them two fighting again, if nothing else.
Yeah, it is intriguing. And when I posted about it on social media, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, Zhang's going to kill him. This is going to be the end of Deontay Wilder. I'm not so sure about that, Keith. I mean, one thing we saw with Zhang against Parker is that Zhang lets you hit him, yeah, right? Like Parker a couple of times loaded up and hit Zhang with some big punches. Parker's just not the heaviest of hitters. He lets Deontay Wilder load up on him. He's going to get hit with something big. And we have seen Jilei Zhang hurt in the past. I mean, he was knocked down early in his career. I thought he was wobbled at least once by Parker in that fight. So, you know, if Wilder gets that kind of opportunity, he can knock this guy out. I mean, I think Zhang's got a good chin, but I don't think it's a completely unhurtable opponent. I think he can be hurt by Deontay Wilder. That's why I like this fight for Deontay Wilder at this stage. And I like it for Zhang as well because, you know, look, Wilder, he's not going to outbox you in the way that Joseph Parker outboxed Jilei Zhang. He's not going to move as much. And when he does move, it's not all that effective, as we saw in the Parker fight. So I like this fight for both these guys as well. You know, one of my takeaways too from this fight being made is something I think you and I have talked about a little bit in the past, and that's the complete irrelevance of a rematch clause when it comes to Saudi Arabian fights, right? Like there was a rematch clause in place, a bilateral rematch clause or a two-fight deal anyway for Joseph Parker to fight Jilei Zhang. Both these guys talked about it after that fight a few weeks ago. Obviously, that is not relevant here. Obviously, the Saudis are going to do what the Saudis are going to do. They want this fight. They get this fight. So, you know, when people talk about a rematch clause between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk, I kind of feel the same way about it, Keith. I don't know about you, but like, I feel like if Tyson Fury comes out with a win over Alexander Usyk, we are 100% going to get Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua because that is a far bigger fight and a far more appetizing fight for Saudi officials. So, you know, it's nice to have the rematch clause, but to me, it's not as enforceable out there as it might be here in the U.S. or in Eastern Europe or in other places.
Chris, I think that's the major distinction, that this principle applies only to Saudi Arabia because they have the financial wherewithal to offer the fighter who is owed the immediate rematch something that's going to satisfy him financially instead. Because if you don't offer that, well, then that fighter is going to try and enforce his rematch clause, much like Joe Joyce did when he fought Jilei Zhang the second time. There wasn't much call for a rematch, frankly. I mean, he beat him up.
And Zhang didn't want it. Remember, Zhang, like there was a possibility, maybe not a likelihood, but there was talk of Tyson Fury against Zhang that summer, everything all changed.
Because, of course, Frank Warren is Tyson Fury's co-promoter, also promotes Joe Joyce, and he could have made Joe Joyce whole in another way and maybe convinced him to allow that to happen, to go work on himself defensively, and he wasn't quite ready for the rematch, which it turned out he wasn't. But really, I think this is all within the confines of the Saudi situation because they have so much money that they can, you know, pacify the fighters with big purses for other fights. Because if you're Jilei Zhang and they don't come to you and say, well, we're going to pay you X to fight Deontay Wilder instead of paying you Y to fight Joseph Parker, Well, he wouldn't have done it because he would still have the opportunity, and Parker would be legally obligated to give him a rematch for his interim title, which would put him back in position to fight, potentially fight the winner of the Usyk and Fury fight.
By the way, speaking of Joe Joyce, not good, his last fight, yeah. Not good at all. Came in career high weight, I believe it was, looked slow, just looked like he had nothing left. I know Joe immediately was like, I want to take on all the top guys out there. That might be a mistake. I don't think Joe Joyce has anything left after watching that fight against Cash Ali.
Yeah, he's an older fighter, Chris. Obviously got a very late start to his career after winning a silver medal at the 2016 Olympics. And he's taken, even though he doesn't have that many fights on his record, he's taken a lot of punishment because I'm still waiting for him to avoid a punch. You know, Joe is a very nice guy, very tough guy, you know, took on a lot of tough fighters here over the last several years. But once that chin is broken, so to speak, as we've discussed on the podcast many times, once that seal is broken, sometimes it's over and there's no going back. And then the fighter just isn't the same. So that's what happened with Adam Konofsky. We just thought, how many times did we talk about that? I mean, he took so many punches. And then once it was over, it was over.
Mm, definitely. And I hope that Adam has finally learned his lesson and understands that it's over. I know there were people in his camp that didn't want him to take that fight in Poland a couple of weeks ago. That could have ended a lot worse for Adam. You know, the referee jumped in there pretty early, and good for the referee for doing that, because, you know, that could have been a situation where Adam would have taken a sustained beating and he doesn't need to take any more punches. He was a fun fighter for a few years. That's enough of Adam Konofsky. I think he needs to move on to other things. So this past week, Keith, I was at the Canelo Alvarez Jaime Munguia press conference in Los Angeles, which was really the first chance for reporters to talk to Canelo about his decision to face Jaime Munguia in May. Obviously, over the last couple of months, there's been a lot of talk of Canelo facing David Benavidez. Canelo elected not to face Benavidez, briefly split with PBC, came back to PBC, all to fight a Golden Boy fighter. It's all very, behind the scenes-ish for inside boxing stuff for Canelo Alvarez. But the bottom line is he's facing Jaime Munguia and not David Benavidez. So the media that had a chance to speak to Canelo, you know, understandably, you know, probed on that. And Canelo's rationale, I didn't really know what to make of it. You know, Canelo said a few things that were interesting to me. One, he said that it would take, at least $150 million for him to fight David Benavidez, because Benavidez, to him, he says, brings nothing to the table. He also made a point that I've talked about on the podcast before, that Benavidez is going to come in significantly heavy for a fight against him. And he said something to the effect of, all Benavidez brings is an extra 25 pounds. And I've said here on this show sometime in the last couple of months that one of the things that Eddie Reynoso, the trainer and manager of Canelo Alvarez, has said to members of Team Benavidez is that Benavidez is a weight bully. That's what they've called him in, you know, behind the scenes negotiations. So that kind of tracks with everything I had heard about what was going on behind the scenes. But you read it all, you watched it all, you consumed it all. What did you make of how Canelo addressed the Benavidez stuff?
Well, people keep receipts, Chris. So, you know, Canelo's not painting himself in a positive light as it relates to David Benavidez. The guy who fought Amir Khan is calling someone else a weight bully. He has fought in two light heavyweight title fights against guys who are of similar size to David Benavidez from a height perspective. Dmitry Bivol, a little shorter than Benavidez, not much. Sergey Kovalev, slightly shorter than Benavidez, not much. He fought them at the 175-pound limit. Now, one of those fights went well and one of them did not, but he has fought in a higher weight class. Remember, we were in the room 2 years ago, Chris, or almost 2 years ago now, when he was openly discussing and, quite frankly, overlooking Dmitry Bivol, when he was talking about moving up to cruiserweight for his following fight to fight Makabu, who was a huge puncher in the cruiserweight division and certainly would weigh more than David Benavidez weighs in the ring if they had gotten into the ring together, was also talking about moving up to heavyweight to fight Oleksandr Usyk. Mm-hmm. So a lot has changed in the last 2 years. And look, Canelo's free to fight whoever he wants. He has the power within this boxing business, and he's the biggest star in American boxing. He has the power to dictate who he fights. But you also can't say nonsensical things as it relates to who you want to fight and who you don't. I don't know what a logical response would be for him not wanting to fight David Benavidez, for it not to look like he's avoiding David Benavidez, because that certainly appears to be what's happening now. But saying that he's too big or he's a weight bully is not going to cut it when you have fought twice at light heavyweight and light heavyweight title fights, talked about fighting at cruiserweight, talked about fighting at heavyweight. Look, people didn't forget that he said all these things. So I don't know what he's hoping to accomplish by saying what he's saying, but he's also saying David Benavidez doesn't bring anything to the table. What did Jermell Charlo bring to the table? Two weight classes below him, didn't have a title, wasn't the brother that people actually wanted. Now that ship has sailed as well. No one wants to see him fight Jermell Charlo at this point either, but wasn't even the person in his family that people wanted to see Canelo fight once upon a time. So what did he bring?
Not a lot, you know, an undisputed championship from two weight classes below, you know,
right,
that's the only marketing tool.
Right, but Canelo wasn't eligible to win those championships. So the point is, they're saying a lot of things that are just not masking the fact that for whatever reason, Canelo Alvarez is avoiding David Benavidez, period.
Right. So here's my take on this, and it's been pretty consistent over the last few months as this has kind of unfolded. Generally speaking, Keith, the older great fighter does not fight the younger great fighter unless the risk is absolutely worth the reward, right? So let's go back and look at Canelo and Gennady Golovkin. Gennady Golovkin wanted to fight Canelo because he knew unquestionably the risk would be worth the reward. Gennady Golovkin was fighting for $2, $3 million in regular fights on HBO. He fights Canelo, it's $10 million. Well, whatever the number was to fight Canelo Alvarez. You know, Canelo Alvarez against, as you point out, against effectively anybody is going to make $35, $40 million. He's going to make $40-plus million to fight Jaime Munguia. If he goes off and fights Edgar Berlanga in September, he's going to make north of $30 million. If he fights, I was going to say Jermall Charlo, but probably not. But if he fights somebody else along that line, on that level, he's going to make a pile of money for a low risk, pretty high reward matchup. So when Canelo says $150 million, I think he actually means that. I think he's like kind of hoping, and I think Samson Lukowicz sort of kind of affirmed this. I think he's actually hoping somebody steps to the table, whether it's Saudi Arabia or somebody else, that puts that kind of money on the table for him to fight David Benavidez to make the risk worth the reward. I agree with you that calling somebody a weight bully is nonsensical since he did that. Talking about how big Benavidez is going to be is nonsensical because Bivol was a naturally bigger guy. The cruiserweights, Junior Makabu at that time would have been a bigger guy. Usyk would have been a significantly bigger guy at that time. I think that this is all about the risk just not being worth the reward to him right now. Even a guaranteed purse of $55 million to Canelo Alvarez is not going to be worth the reward. Now, we can debate that, you know, criticize Canelo. It's all fair game. But that, to me, is what it comes down to. I don't know if you see it that way as well, but I think the risk for him is not worth the reward.
That's probably the way he's looking at it, Chris. But at the same time, the public is not buying what he's selling as to the reasons that he's giving for not fighting David Benavidez. Because I agree with you, Chris. This was clearly, by throwing that $150 million number out there, that was clearly a message to one person, the Turki Alashik. That's it. That's who he was talking to. Now, I don't think they're paying $150 million for any boxer to fight any other boxer, but they might pay $75 million. If they really want that fight to be in the Middle East, I mean, I could see that. But $150 million, that's just in effect saying I'm not fighting him. You might as well just say I'm not fighting him because no one's paying you $150 million to fight anyone. There's no fight on today's landscape. There's not a boxing match that is worth anything comparable to Mayweather-Pacquiao. And that's the type of purse you're talking about when you get into the $150 million range. Pacquiao didn't even make $150 million. He didn't walk away with a $150 for that fight. He made over $100, but not $150. So I don't think that anyone's going to pay him that. And he's in effect saying, I don't want the fight by saying that. So the question I would have, though, moving forward, I don't really have a problem with the Munguia fight. I would obviously much rather see him fight David Benavidez. That's the premise we're working off of here anyway. I don't have a problem with him fighting Munguia. I mean, it's a sellable fight because they're both Mexicans mm-hmm. and everything. I expect Canelo to knock Munguia out. As you have said before, I think the last time I was on and maybe other times in the last couple of weeks, you know, Munguia could give him problems. He's, you know, he's a volume mm-hmm. puncher and everything. You could see him winning rounds and then it's eventually getting clipped because Canelo's a bigger puncher. But I don't have a problem with the event. It's on Cinco de Mayo weekend. They're both Mexican. Munguia's undefeated. He's worked his way up into this position. It's a much more sellable fight, in my opinion, than him fighting Berlanga, and probably a more competitive fight than him fighting Berlanga. So I don't have a problem with that necessarily. But then let's just say he knocks out Jaime Munguia. Well, who is he going to fight after that? And at which point does it become – at which point does the juice not worth the squeeze as it relates to paying Canelo Alvarez $45 million, $55 million? Because sooner or later, you're not getting a return on this investment because mm-hmm. people are going to be turned off to the types of opponents he's fighting. So who is he going to fight if he beats Munguia in the way that we think that he will, if it's not going to be David Benavidez? Who?
I think whether we like it or not, Edgar Berlanga is an overwhelming favorite to get that fight because they're going to put Edgar Berlanga on ice for the next 6 months and hope that, you know, Canelo looks that way, hope that the numbers financially will work. I'm not saying that it's a great fight by any stretch, but I if you're asking who is he going to fight next, if I was making a list of potential opponents, I would put Edgar Berlanga at the top of the list.
And pay Canelo $45 million? I'm just throwing.
I don't know if it would be. I don't think it would be that big a guarantee for sure. It would still be significant, but I don't think it would be in the 40-plus million guarantee. Because, like, to your point, he's not going to fight Jermall Charlo. Nobody's going to pay for that. I don't even know what Jermall Charlo does next. If Jermall Charlo goes out and fights a credible opponent at 168, he's probably going to get beat. Like, that's just the reality of it. Truthfully, say the same thing about Edgar Berlanga as well. Like, that's kind of why I think he's going to be on ice for the foreseeable future. But if those are really your only two options, what's he going to do? Like, is it realistic to do a rematch? Let's say Bivol beats Beterbiev for the undisputed belts. Is that realistic to do a Bivol Beterbiev fight or a Beterbiev or the Bivol Canelo fight? You know, sometime yeah. in September, yeah, could be a rematch with Bivol and Barry. I don't know.
Right. Well, people would want to see him fight Bivol because they want to see if he can do better in the second fight than he did in the first. Yeah. But he doesn't seem to want to fight him. So, this is why people are becoming increasingly frustrated by Canelo. He, in one breath, is going to say, well, what does David Benavidez bring to the table? Now, he's clearly the guy that virtually every boxing fan wants to see him fight within the super middleweight division. So he says he doesn't bring anything to the table. He's undefeated. He's young. He's popular. He's not nearly as popular as Canelo. No one is, right? I mean, for the most part. But what does Edgar Berlanga bring to the table? If that's who he's going to want, I'm not picking on Berlanga. I'm just saying if Benavidez brings nothing to the table, you can't show up in July and say, I'm going to fight Berlanga because what does he bring to the table?
Mm-hmm. No,
and Benavidez doesn't, yeah. You know?
Yeah, Benavidez brings more to the table than Munguia does, than Berlanga does, than Charlo does, than Terrence Crawford does, quite frankly, in a fight like that. He brings the most to the table of anyone that's out there at super middleweight and below. There's no doubt about that. But again, it comes back to just the fact that Canelo doesn't believe that the risk is worth the reward.
You just mentioned the X factor there, Chris, and I know this is something we've discussed on the podcast before as well. If Crawford's an option, as much as I don't love the fight in the ring, I don't love the fight because I think Canelo is too big. But there are a lot of people who think Terrence Crawford would have a real chance to win that fight, and it is certainly a marketable fight. So if the answer to my question, who is he going to fight next, is Terrence Crawford, well, I would still rather see him fight Benavidez, as I think most people would. But it's a palatable option if it's not going to be Benavidez and it's Crawford.
Yeah.
But his excuse for Crawford is I'm not going to get any credit. He's too small. They're too big. They're too small. They're too Mexican. Come on.
too big, too small, too Mexican. Looks like a slogan on a t-shirt. Jeez. You can throw up there. All right. there'll be a lot of time to talk about this before May 4th. But the news this week in the PBC world as well is that, well, Keith, I know, just brace yourself. I know you're going to be shocked by this. Keith Thurman is out of a fight. And I let that wash over you for a moment. Keith Thurman has withdrawn from a fight with an injury. Not questioning the injury from Keith Thurman. I saw the medical report he posted on social media. He has an injury, but that's just the reality of Keith Thurman at this point. He doesn't fight for injury reasons a lot. He doesn't fight for personal reasons. So it should not be a shocking development that he has withdrawn from this March 30th fight against Tim Zhu. The replacement is Sebastian Fundora. And if you put aside the ridiculousness of Sebastian Fundora, you know, one fight removed from getting knocked cold by Brian Mendoza, now fighting for a unified championship, if you put that aside, I think this fight is a lot better than what a Zhu Thurman fight would have been. Now, you and I have talked. I thought there was a better chance of an asteroid hitting the Earth than Keith Thurman winning that fight against Tim Zhu. I thought he would have been on his bike the entire time. Tim Zhu eventually would have tracked him down, and he would have stopped him, or he would have administered a real beating on him over the course of 12 rounds. Fundora is a legitimate junior middleweight. He is 6'6", and until that moment against Brian Mendoza, when he got knocked cold, had looked pretty damn good in the division. Had looked like a top guy in the 154-pound division. So this is a fight between two legitimate, please, top five guys at 154, top seven guys at 154. I like this fight competitively a lot more than I liked Zhu Thurman. How do you feel about it?
Well, Chris, also keep in mind that Sebastian Fundora was shutting out Brian Mendoza before he got caught with the hook. You know, and it was a great finish by Brian Mendoza, changed his life, changed his career and everything. Kudos to him for doing that. But he was down 60-54 on two scorecards and 59-55 on the third scorecard going into the seventh round of that fight. So Sebastian Fundora had convincingly won that fight up until that point. I understand fans' frustration with him getting a title shot in what's his first fight since getting violently knocked out last April 8th. But it's not Sebastian Fundora's fault necessarily.
No.
Because he would have preferred to have fought in between. I mean, he didn't say, oh, I'm going to take a year off and fight next March 30th. That's just the way it shook out because of everything happened with PBC and Showtime and then realigning with a new partner and Prime Video and then delaying the start and all that kind of stuff. So that's why Sebastian Fundora hasn't fought in almost a year. Yeah, ideally, you would like to have seen him fight someone else in between. However, Fundora was waiting rather patiently for his title shot before that happened against Mendoza, and he took what turned out to be one tough fight too many and never got the title shot that he should have gotten based on his win against Erickson Lubin, which was a fight of the year candidate, a fight people really remember fondly from April of 2022. So,
except Erickson Lubin, yes.
Except Erickson Lubin, who also has come back and, you know, and
has give him credit for that
too. Yeah. So from that standpoint, like I'm almost, while I understand the fans' frustration, like I said, I'm almost happy for Sebastian Fundora that he's finally getting his title shot. It happened in an odd way, in an unusual way here, of course. And on the other side of it, from PBC standpoint, I know they're taking some criticism, but what were they supposed to do? I mean, they did the best they could with Keith Thurman pulling out of the fight less than 2 weeks in advance. And as you said, this fight might be more intriguing from a matchup standpoint than the Zhu Thurman fight, which you thought was not going to be competitive at all. And I think you said he should have been 1,000-1 underdog, if I'm remembering correctly. So
10,000 was probably closer to reality. Yeah.
But seriously, like, and from Tim Zhu's perspective, I mean, Tim Zhu, who we've given a lot of credit on podcasts in the past, I mean, this guy, they said, okay, you're going to fight a 5'9"-ish right-handed fighter. Here, go train entire training camp. And less than 2 weeks later, we're going to find what's really a freakish substitute opponent who's a 6'6" southpaw for whom you can't find any legitimate sparring. And, oh, you're going to fight him instead. And Tim Zhu's like, I don't care. Let's go.
I love that about Tim Zhu.
It's amazing.
I just do.
I mean, he just doesn't.
I love it. I hope it doesn't backfire on him. That's why I'm intrigued by this fight, because if you're Fundora and you're preparing for Sergey Boichuk, who's kind of a banger, right? So you're ready for a physical 154. You have to switch tactics. Boichuk and Zhu are not the same fighter, but you're preparing for the same type of fight. You're probably not doing a complete 180 on some of the things you're training for. Tim Zhu, Fundora is not going to be hard to find, Like, Fedora's 6'6", but he doesn't use any of that. Like, he is, like he fights in a phone booth.
He's 5'6" instead of...
That's who he is. He's not going to be hard to find. So, if you're Zoo, you're probably training with, like, welterweights, who you're going to have to track down. You're practicing movement. You're practicing cutting off the ring. None of that is going to be relevant in this fight against Fedora. And I think it's going to make for a really, really fun fight that I think Zoo is going to be tested in. Like, I think he's going to face adversity in this fight. Fedora can most unquestionably crack. And if you're having to punch up at a guy as often as Tim Zoo is, that might give him some problems in this fight. Now, like, I also, for the record, Keith, I don't think this causes that big a hit when it comes to pay-per-view sales. Mostly because, number one, I don't think it was going to do well in pay-per-view either way. It's just not. It's not going to do a great number on pay-per-view. But I think anyone that thought it was grossly overestimating the value of Keith Thurman on pay-per-view. I don't think he is some kind of magnetic pay-per-view draw that now that he's out, there are potential buyers out there going, you know what? I'm not going to buy this anymore. I want to see Thurman Zoo. I'm not going to buy Fedora Zoo. Like, I don't believe those people actually exist. I think if you're a boxing fan and you wanted to watch Tim Zoo against a credible opponent, you're fine. In fact, you're probably more enthused about this main event because it's going to be a banger, and I think it has the potential to be really competitive, where Thurman Zoo would not have been a banger and would have been as competitive as my chances of getting into the NASA program tomorrow. That's how competitive Thurman Zoo would have been in a fight on March 30th. So this, to me, is a win for PBC. Whether they see it that way or not, I don't know, but this, to me, is a big win for PBC.
I see where you're coming from, Chris. The only thing I would say is that Keith Thurman, while he never fights, he's only fought once in the last 5 years. He is a big name in boxing, and I'm not saying it's going to make a huge difference in the buy rate. You're probably right about that. But Keith Thurman, frankly, he's a bigger name than Sebastian Fedora.
If this had been 2018, where Keith Thurman's coming off back-to-back fights on CBS, where he's drawn 5 million viewers and people are watching, I get that. But you know, absence does not make the heart grow fonder in boxing. Absence means absence. Absence means we forgot. And most people that remember Keith Thurman now remember the guy that lost to Manny Pacquiao. Like, that's probably the lasting memory in the brain of people that have watched Keith Thurman. At least Fedora, you've got some tape. I mean, he's been fighting on Showtime. Like, he's been out there. I mean, he did get knocked out cold, but that was a highlight in and of itself. Like, I just think this is just a better fight. It is a win for PBC to have this guy back, and replacing Fedora with Mendoza against Boyachuk, even though the fact that that's for an interim title is insane, that's a win there too. Like, Mendoza's a banger. Mendoza-Boyachuk is going to be a good fight. That's going to be a real scrap in the opener. So PBC wins in this. Whether they think they do or not, it's going to be a good card. Don't expect a big pay-per-view buy because it's just going to be hard, no matter what, when you don't have a star-studded top of the pay-per-view. But it's going to be a good card. It's going to be a good show. It's a solid opener for PBC with Amazon.
Yeah, ideally, as we've said before, Chris, ideally this fight would be on Amazon. It would be on Prime Video as opposed to being a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I think PBC, you know, Tom Brown, Al Haymon, they all did a really good job on the fly here of piecing this back together in the best way that they could, as you said, with Fedora in the main event, a credible, although he's coming off a knockout loss, he's a credible 154-pound contender and was a former interim champion. You slide Mendoza into his spot and against Bahacek. Anybody who fights Bahacek is going to be in a good fight because of the way he fights. It's going to be a good action fight. Mendoza can crack. I'm looking forward to seeing that fight on the undercard as well. The one thing that you did mention that is just completely perplexing and of no surprise to anyone is how Mendoza and Bahacek are fighting for the interim WBC title when Fedora and Tim Zoo will be fighting for the actual WBC title in the same
interim belt. I didn't even think of that. An interim belt on the line.
I mean, it's just, I mean, other than Mauricio Sulaiman saying, I just want to squeeze as much money out of March 30th as humanly imaginable, there's no rational explanation for this happening. Bahacek's getting screwed a little bit because he was supposed to fight Fedora to become the mandatory. Well, he'll have to beat Mendoza to become the mandatory instead. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's the risk you take in buying. You know, guys get hurt all the time. So, I mean, things happen like this, so you just have to deal with it accordingly. But what justification could you have for having an interim and a vacant interim title and then the same actual title vacant being fought for on the same card. It's nuts.
And the reality, too, is that Sergey, as I'm looking at his box rec right now, is far more, you know, credible in terms of resume to fight for the full title. If you were going to elevate anyone based on their resume, it would probably be Sergey Boychuk, because, you know what, he's got 5 wins in a row. You know, since his TKO loss to Brandon Adams back in 2021, he's been active. Credit Tom Loeffler for that, keeping him out there on these cards in California. So,
but he's not the PBC fighter. So there you go.
Correct. That's exactly. So it's kind of like throwing a bone to him in this one, saying the WBC title's on the line. I'm sure he's going to pay a nice little sanctioning fee for it. But bottom line, Fundora against Zhu is a fun fight, a competitive fight. It is not a fight that I think I'd have a better chance of pulling off successful brain surgery than Keith Thurman winning a fight against Tim Zhu.
Went from NASA to brain surgery.
I've
seen your SAT scores. I don't know how you got at the bottom.
They weren't good. No. I had some credible writing and reading and writing scores. Math and science, not so much. Not so good. Keith, always appreciate your time, man. Good to catch up.
Same here, Chris. Take care, bud.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idak for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much. I go sleep.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.